c'est moi, Mike Malloy. Welcome to tonight's program. We are going to be doing a podcast trivia in about half an hour, and we have a guest at the top of next hour, Dr. Roger Libby, who I mentioned to you last night. We will be talking about sex and body parts and, you know. This hour is sponsored by Russ and Maxine. And their message is, thanks, Mike, for saying what we, the humble masses, need to learn so that we can intelligently reclaim our voices. Let's put Stand Your Ground on ice. Well, thanks. That's very nice, Russ and Maxine. But, you know my feeling. I'm just part of the dialogue. But thank you, Russ and Maxine. Did you like that? Bonsoir, mes amis, c'est moi. Eh? No answer. Nobody answered. All right, well, to hell with it then. Try to improve yourself and your audience just doesn't care. Okay. So now it'll just be standard radio talk show English. A shout out to Newark Mayor Cory Booker. You heard about this, I'm sure. He came home from work. The house next door was on fire. His bodyguards or his detail or whatever said, come on, we'll get the fire department out here. The house was raging up on the second floor. Carrie Booker said, my neighbor's in there, a woman that he knew, older woman, older than Corey, I called him Carrie. Again, his detail, the head of his detail said, no, you can't go in there. Booker ran in anyway, ran up the steps, got into the kitchen. There was thick black smoke. He heard the woman crying for help. And he ran through the smoke, got to one of the rooms deeper in the apartment, realized that she was on her bed and couldn't move, went inside, grabbed her, slung her over his shoulder. And when he turned around, come back out, it got, I guess, disoriented from the smoke. He couldn't breathe. Flames were shooting up all over the kitchen. Somehow he managed to get her out. She was in the hospital tonight, the last report I heard, with second-degree burns on her back. Cory Booker, if you saw him on television today, his right hand was bandaged up from the burns that he received. And I just... I'm just so impressed by that. You know, I started thinking, can you imagine, Cory Booker, of course, is the Democratic mayor of Newark. And in my real cynical way, I started thinking, wow, God, you know, I mean, first of all, I started thinking, would I do that? Would I have the courage to do that? You know, if you ask yourself that kind of a question, you got to let it float around for a while. I still haven't come up with an answer for me, but I know that right-wingers or conservatives would never do that. Never. They would stand there and go, oh, well, there's somebody in there. Oh, let me get on my cell phone or my BlackBerry or my iPhone. Hello, 911. Rush Limbaugh is too obese to run into a burning house and run up the steps. Sean Hannity's a coward. Neil Bortz would say his back hurts too much. Beck? Glenn Beck would start laughing hysterically and throwing cans of gasoline onto the flames. And Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, when the firefighters showed up, he would tell them he was going to end their union. Ah, Republicans, cowards, sneaks. Now, if the NRA, somebody was there from the NRA, they'd try to shoot the fire. Here, let me take a shot at it. Right-wingers are just not known for their empathy, compassion, concern about other people. They are toxically focused on themselves. I have some church stuff here tonight. It turns out to be church stuff. Didn't intend it to be. The Obamas released their tax returns. And the thing that was noticeable to me and caught the attention of a lot of people, the Obamas' charitable contributions totaled 22% of their income. 22% they gave to charity. The Christian faith requires 10%. Isn't that tithing? Rick Santorum, he and his wife, this sanctimonious fart wandering around all over the country all during the Republican primary season with his sanctimonious ass hanging out for everybody to kiss it, acting all Jesus-y. You know how much Santorum contributed to charities? 2%. The Obamas 22, the Santorials 2. You hypocritic little snotball, you. That's just incredible. Isn't that just so typical? Matthew 25, verses 31 through 46. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit upon his glorious throne, and all the nations will be assembled before him, and he will separate them one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will place the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. A stranger, and you welcomed me. Naked, and you clothed me. Ill, and you cared for me. In prison, and you visited me." Then the righteous will answer him and say, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you ill or in prison and visit you?" And the king will say to them and reply, "Amen. I say to you, whatever you did for one of these least brothers of mine, you did for me." Then he will say to those on his left, "Depart from me, you accursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. A stranger, and you gave me no welcome. Naked, and you gave me no clothing. Ill and in prison, and you did not care for me." Then they will answer and say, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or ill or in prison and not minister to your needs?" And he will answer them, "Amen, I say to you, what you did not do for one of these least ones, you did not do for me." And those will go off to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. Goodbye, Rick Santorial! Adios! Say hello to all the sinners in hell! 2%. 2%! Oh, look at me, Santorum's out there. I'm a Christian. Barack Obama's waging war on religious freedom, waging war on Christians. Oh, and he's not even of our faith. He's of that other faith, Muslim. Oh, Barack Obama, he's trying to destroy Christian. How much did you contribute? How much, Rick? How closely did you follow the dictates of your own church? Squeak, 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 squeak. Women shouldn't have birth control pills. Squeak, squeak, squeak. Women should be forced to have probes. Squeak, 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 squeak.
How much did you contribute to charity, Rick?
Squeak, 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 squeak. Squeak, 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 squeak. 21 past the hour. Say goodbye to the middle class from Prairie 2. Another Friday night fright here. Here we go. We've had an increase in the initial unemployment claims number for the second straight week. And this may or may not be bad news. It's too early to get really worried about it. We're still way below the 400,000 number that seems to indicate a failing economy these days. The numbers are seasonally adjusted, and thanks to global warming, we had no winter to speak of, causing the normal spring spike in activity to start in January. Low winter heating bills put an average of $400 per family into the economy, with twice that in the Northeast. Unfortunately, high gasoline prices are taking it all back again. And the far right is screaming about hyperinflation once again because of gas prices. And this is totally wrong-headed thinking. It's common among Federal Reserve board members. This is what is spooking the stock market, that the Fed might start fighting inflation. Fighting non-existent inflation would trigger deflation and a free-fall crash of the markets. Improved sovereign bond sales in Europe did calm the markets for a while. Markets did resume sliding again today, so that wasn't enough. Let's be clear. It's not about the jobs numbers. Wall Street doesn't give a crap about how many people are employed or unemployed. It's the Fed they care about. Obama is gaining political traction with the proposed Buffett rule that would force the rich to pay a minimum 30% tax on all income over $1 million, except on municipal bond interest. This would effectively double Mitt Romney's taxes. His wife might need to get a job. Just kidding. She can stay home and hand crank the car elevator to save money. The problem is that the Buffett rule only goes halfway. History shows that the top tax rate must be at least 50% to have a stable economy. Income over about $5 million a year should be taxed at the pre-Reagan rate of 74% at a minimum. FDR wanted a 100% top tax rate, but settled for 91%. Republicans immediately started drilling holes into that rate with exemptions and loopholes under the excuse of bolstering the economy. It did just the opposite, of course, and this allowed them to call for even more loopholes. Republicans still make the same excuses today for why the rich should not only be exempt from paying their share, but with a straight face, propose paying no taxes at all, but only if you're rich. The peasants? Well, they should pay taxes, of course. The right-wingers claim 48% of Americans pay no taxes. They mean income taxes, but they don't say that. FICA taxes, Social Security, bring in almost as much revenue as the income tax does, and rich people pay in almost nothing toward that. Then there are sales taxes that have tripled since Reagan. Local taxes and fees have skyrocketed while services are cut in order to give huge tax breaks to big business. In fact, the only people who pay no taxes of any kind are the elderly confined to nursing homes. Then there is the decline in tax revenue caused from wages that have been driven down and manufacturing actively disappearing. Working Americans make half of what they did prior to Reagan, and even with 75% of women working, family income is now declining sharply. Only 1 in 10 households had 2 people working prior to Reagan. We've had massive gains in productivity in the last 30 years, but the gains have all gone to the rich. Plus, they are stealing what the middle class already had in wealth, to the point that the next big downturn will eliminate the middle class entirely. PrairieNumeral2.com. That's his website. Check him out. I read today in the Times, or today or yesterday, the business section, that a couple of the killer banks are doing it again. They've already started with subprime loans, bundling them and selling them off to investors. Subprime loans, once again. And once again, the subprime loans, of course, are the ones made to people that just can't afford what the banks are trying to do to them. But they don't know what the banks are trying to do to them. So here we go again. And Barney Frank, and who was the other guy? That, you know, lending, whatever the hell it was, you know what I'm talking about. that is having holes drilled in it, just like a rowboat out in the middle of a lake. The Republicans are drilling hole after hole after hole, and everybody in the middle class, as Prairie 2 points out, is in that rowboat. Dodd-Frank, thank you. But there they go again. These sons of bitches don't care. They just literally do not care. The banksters. And why should they? Man, when you're running a casino, did I say this the other night? You're running a casino and you're the house and you know you're going to win. And if you do lose, you know that the geese are going to pay for all your losses, as they do every time. We're the geese, you and me, American taxpayer. So people like the Koch brothers and Wall Street, what are you kidding me? Why should they stop? That makes no sense. When we come back after this break, podcast trivia, get on the phone, 877-996-2556. Subscription to Malloy program podcast downloads commercial free. Put in your ear every morning, even on those nights when we so screw up at this program that there's nothing there, but it still comes from us. Retail value is $56.59.40, which works out to 25 cents a show. That's why we call this a two-bit radio program. All right, do we have a contestant? We do indeed. Royal is in Des Moines, Iowa. Hello, Royal.
Hello, Mr. Malloy.
Are you ready to play?
Let's do it.
Okay, here we go. Music maestro, if you will, please. I can't start Royal until we have the music, so there it is. All right, here we go. Recently, there was an incident being described as a failure to launch. What is it referring to? Would it be A, Newt Gingrich's campaign to the Republican nominee for president? B, Rick Santorum's campaign to the Republican nominee for president? C, Rush Limbaugh's expectation after swallowing a triple dose of Viagra? Or D, North Korea's attempt to loft what they called a communications satellite into Earth orbit?
Is it D?
D. You think it's D? You're right. Okay, Royal, have you ever won anything on the radio before?
Oh, my emotional problems are just getting so much better.
No, what I said was, have you ever won anything on the radio before?
Yes, that's why the problems are getting so much better.
Okay, all right, I got it, all right. Okay, all right, Royal, hold on a second. Well, Kathy gets the pertinent information, and congratulations, pal. We're glad you won. What? Okay. Well, by the way, this hour is being sponsored by Russ and Maxine. And their message, thanks, Mike, for saying what we, the humble masses, need to learn so that we can intelligently reclaim our voices. Let's put Stand Your Ground on ice. I can agree with that. There's a few other things I like to put on ice, too. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure you do. GK in Minnesota sent me an email. I think GK was kind of PO'd when GK sent this. Hey, Mike, clearly there is never a shortage of these right-wing, fascist-lying, cheating, pond-scum-sucking, Republican-backing billionaires and millionaires like Foster Freeze. and Bill Donahue, two that I mentioned last night, to back the latest and the brightest next best thing of the GOP. And the brightest reminds me of what those people remind me of, and that is of moths that hover around the light on the porch during a summer evening. They jump from light to light, seeking the brightest light. How good would it be if what happens to some of the moths would happen to those scumbags as well? Keep stripping the bark, Mike. GK in Minnesota. You talking about the bug zappers? Yeah, those things really freak me out. I mean, they really do. I don't know. They just, I don't know. There's something about those. Further proof, if any is needed, that Republicans are totally, completely, irrevocably insane. Here it is. According to a new Gallup poll released today, a majority of Americans support the proposed so-called Buffett rule, which would require individuals earning $1 million or more per year to pay at least 30% of their income in taxes. The survey found that 60% of adults support enacting such a policy, while 37% oppose it. By significant margins, both independents and Democrats supported the measure, with independents 63-33. Support millionaires and billionaires paying 30% tax. Democrats, 74-24% support the measure. Republicans opposed it, but by a smaller margin, 54-43%. So 54% of Republicans say, no, no, don't tax the rich people. No! Rush Limbaugh said I should say that. No! No! We want to keep paying the taxes. I make $57,000 a year, and I want to keep paying more taxes than the pig man pays, because I love the pig man. I love his smell. I love what he says. I'd like to have one of his sweat rags or one of those god-awful polo shirts he wears all the time with the half-ass horizontal stripes. Somebody should tell him you don't wear horizontal stripes when you're grossly obese. Fifty-four percent of Republicans say the rich should not be taxed at 30%. What did I just read here that Perry 2 wrote? The top tax rate was 71% for people that make this kind of money. Until Reagan took a look at that and said, what's this, mommy? Oh, it's all right, honey. It's nothing. And then somebody came along and said, here, sign this. Oh, what am I signing here? It's okay. It's okay, Ronnie. Just go ahead and sign it. Okay. Mommy, should I sign this? Yes, you should, sweetheart. And that cut the top tax rate to what? What it cut to? I don't know. The American Nazi Party attempted to make a foray into Washington's halls of power this week. The American Nazi Party. You didn't know we had one. I got to respect them. At least they don't call themselves the National Socialists or something. They call themselves the American Nazi Party. Registering their first lobbyist as a liaison to U.S. lawmakers. Get you down. John Bowles. Oh, I'm sorry. It says here, John Bowles, the National Socialist Movement's presidential nominee in 2008. No, it's an American Nazi Party. Registered Tuesday, according to U.S. News and World Report. He stated on his registration form that he intends to lobby on the issues of, quote, political rights and ballot access laws, end quote. Ooh, well, that's really good, Nazi. Asked by U.S. News World Report if he thought an avowed Nazi would actually be able to secure meetings with politicians, Mr. John Bowles, or is it Bowles? I'm not sure. Bowles, I guess. John Bowles responded with confidence. He said, quote, I don't see why not. Of course, I won't approach anybody in Congress unless it's a very interesting issue or law. I'm going to be very careful about the issues I choose for this. While Mr. Bowles seems self-assured, Business Insider flagged an interview with Wikinews in 2008 that may have some members of Congress think twice before sitting down with him. Oh, come on. They're not going to think twice. They're just going to ask him how much money he's got. In the interview, Mr. Bowles says he once ran as a Baltimore City Convention delegate to the Republican Party convention in 1984. Of course he did. And explains his 2008 presidential platform. See, remember, he was the presidential nominee for the National Socialist Movement in 2008. This is what he said, quote, back then, quote, "I am running as the white people's candidate for president of the USA in 2008 because I believe that America has changed for the worse because the once dominate white European American is being reduced to second-class citizen status and losing political power. Much of the present American Southwest is reverting to a Spanish-speaking Mexican culture, with Puerto Ricans breeding faster than blacks in New York City. And Cuban refugees still crowding into Florida. It is possible that North America may soon look like, well, South America. White Americans need to start voting as a block and not as individuals if they are to have an effective voice in government, or America will turn into a third world country." Puerto Ricans are breeding faster than black? What's a black? A blah person? So here he is, folks. John Bowles. Appropriate name. He's registered as the first lobbyist of the American Nazi Party as a liaison to U.S. lawmakers. Now, I know he's the, I don't know, some Democrats will probably welcome him, but every single Republican, even the Republicans who are Jews, are going to welcome this guy. Hey, man, how you doing? What? Wait, John Bowles? What a hell of a name. I bet you were teased about that when you were in elementary school, right? Huh? Hey, did you move your bowels? Ha, ha, ha! I bet that was real funny. How much money are you bringing here to this meeting with me? My name's Eric Cantor, by the way. let's have a sit down. Before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Russ and Maxine. And their message, thanks, Mike, for saying what we, the humble masses, need to learn so that we can intelligently reclaim our voices. Let's put Stand Your Ground on ice. Russ and Maxine, thank you very much for the sponsorship. That's very kind. I appreciate it a great deal. Mitt Romney was in St. Louis talking to the NRA at their convention. You know they're not allowed to carry guns in their convention, I don't think. When he ran for the Senate in 1994, Mitt Romney said, quote, "I don't line up with the NRA," end quote. But since then, he's had his conversion. He's had a conversion on everything. Every single thing. Everything, the sleazy, slimy little worm. This is a guy with the same kind of convictions as the pig man. In other words, nothing. But isn't it amazing how the mommy wars? I mean, my God, it's like the 80s again. Just because Hillary Rosen makes a comment that was factually correct. Oh, the right wing loves this. Oh, my God. Oh, see? See what the liberals? They don't like stay-at-home mothers. And besides, Hillary Rosen is gay. Ho, ho, ho. Oh, my God. Anyway, Mitt Romney, listen to Romney the prevaricator. Romney is such a liar. I mean, he has become the most lying SOB on the political landscape. Mitt Romney, he is a flat-out liar. Here's the latest. He told the National Rifle Association that President Obama is not protecting gun owners. Now, that topic hasn't come up very much during Obama's time in office, but didn't he sign off on a law to make it easier for people to buy guns? Of course he did. And once again, without offering any details, Romney said that Obama would like to erode gun owners' rights. Well, the reason he didn't offer details, he didn't have to. When you stand in front of a bunch of knuckle-dragging half-asses like these NRA members, well, see my gun? Come on outside. I'll show it to you. When you stand in front of people like that, you don't have to come up with anything true. All you have to do is put together, in the same sentence, the words gun, rights, wants to erode them, and then work in the name Obama. Oh, hell, man, you got an applause line right there. Woo! You could just say it over and over again. Hi, I'm Mitt Romney. I'm glad to be here. Barack Obama wants to erode your gun rights. Thunderous applause. Hi, I'm Mitt Romney. Barack Obama wants to erode your gun rights. Thunderous applause. Hi, I'm Mitt Romney. Barack Obama wants to erode your gun rights. Another round of thunders. And this go on all day. This is like, you know, when you take a piece of chicken and you hold it up for your dog. Here, come here, come here. You want a piece of chicken? Here you go. Yes, a boy. Then you get another piece of chicken. Come here, you want another piece of chicken? There you go. Oh, good boy. Then you get another piece of chicken. Here you go. Come on, come on, come on. You like it? Okay, come on. Good boy. You can do that. I mean, for hours, and the dog will just keep jumping up and taking the chicken, right? So that's all you have to do. When you stand in front of an NRA convention, oh, my God, don't use big words. Yeah, we'll have something to say about that a little bit later, about big words. But, you know, all you have to do is stand there and say, hi, I'm Mitt Romney. I'm sure happy to be here. Do you know Barack Obama's trying to erode your gun rights? Thunderous applause. Hi, I'm Mitt Romney. I'm sure happy to be here. You know, I mean, just over and over and over again. I saw some video. There's Mitt up there, and he brought Ann out. He brought his wife out. But we're not supposed to talk about Ann. No, no, no. Don't say anything about Ann. Oh, God. You know, only Mitt can use her. We can't use her. Only Mitt. Oh, there's my wife. Come on up here, Ann. Thunderous applause. Especially when Ann pulled out her gun. Hi. I'm Ann Romney. I sure am glad to be here. Do you know Barack Obama is trying to erode your gun rights? That's all you have to say. Over and over and over again. Hi. Now, Obama has said very little about firearms. And the people who are really pissed off at him are the gun control groups. Obama's campaign spokesman, according to what I have here, Ben LeBolt, said the president's record, quote, makes clear that he supports and respects the Second Amendment and will fight back against any attempt to mislead voters, end quote. But wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. Mr. LeBolt, It's not about whether or not Barack Obama supports gun rights. That has nothing to do with that. Barack Obama is not a white man. Wake up! These NRA sons of bitches, they don't care whether he supports it or not. He can walk around with guns hanging off his ass. He can have guns in each hand. Two guns strapped to his waist. A couple of guns strapped to his knees. One around his neck. Six more hanging out his pants pockets. And it wouldn't make any difference to the NRA. He's not white. That's what this is all about. Oh, my God. We'll be right back with Roger Libby. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. C'est moi, Mike Malloy, still. This hour is being sponsored by Susan and her message, happy birthday to my husband Jesse, with love from Susan. Happy birthday, Jesse, and thank you, Susan. Happy birthday to Jesse. Happy birthday to Jesse. Happy birthday, dear Jesse. Susan says, happy birthday. Okay, spare me the emails to say, don't give up your day job, your night job, and all that kind of stuff. It is 7:30 the hour. Dr. Roger Libby is a friend of mine, and I'm a friend of his, and I've known Roger for probably 25 years. I met him when he lived, both of us lived in Atlanta proper. We had a mutual friend, comedian Jerry Farber. And one time, Farber called me up and he said, you know, you ought to have Roger Libby on your program. I had been in radio about 2 years, I think, at the time. And I said, why? And Jerry said, well, he's a sex therapist. I said, he's a what? Yep. Jerry said he's a sex therapist. He's really a funny guy. Well, I didn't think Roger was all that funny, but we had a great interview, and then we just became friends. Roger wound up here in Atlanta for a while with the number one program in the entire market. Now, granted, it was only on 2 hours on a Sunday night. But Roger was pulling in like a 10 share, a 12 share in a market that has, I don't know, 60 radio stations. That's unheard of. His ratings were higher than anybody's, including the Pigmans, including just everybody. And it was on a teen rock, current rock station. It was the same station that put together the song Rush Limbaugh. What was I'm a big fat idiot. What was that song? 99X was the name of the radio station here. Yeah, if you do a Google on 99X, you'll come up with that song. But anyway, Roger got married. He has a couple of kids. He lives in Seattle, where he has an active practice. His PhD is in sociology. He is a therapist, And he works with couples who are may or may not be having problems with their sexuality, among other things. Hey, Roger.
Hi, Mike. Good to be with you.
Thanks. How's the wife and kids?
Everything's fine, yeah. I love living in the Northwest. Think you ought to move here.
Yeah, well, I know that. How's everything out there on Bainbridge Island?
Well, it's a beautiful sunny day. You know, the waves are kind of up because of the wind and seagulls and everything around.
It's almost 10 o'clock at night, Roger. What do you mean?
It's 7 o'clock here.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I keep forgetting that.
Yeah, and the time change, remember?
That's right. You and I have had so many conversations in just you know, man-to-man stuff or just kind of talking when we've been together. Last time was last summer when I was out there to visit. And plus we had conversations on radio programs and so on and so forth about the crazed political and religious right in this country that together, if they're not even two separate entities anymore, but together in this entity that they've become, they are really, to me, and I think you'll agree, they're trying to demolish everything about sex that's fun. They're trying
Absolutely.
To trying to take all the pleasure out of it and turn it into some kind of a, you know, like Orthodox Jews, I have heard, on their wedding night, they have a sheet with a hole in it. And they have to have intercourse through the sheet because that's according to really Orthodox Jewish tradition. And it seems like the Christians are trying to do the same thing. Do you agree?
Oh, I absolutely do. I think the right-wing religious influence is there, whether you're talking about Christians or Orthodox Jews or Muslims. It's all the same in the end.
Is that true just in this country, or is it true in the countries where they are more comfortable, or more dominant with their religions?
Oh, I think it's true in throughout the world that rigid religion is the arch enemy of sex, and that wasn't my idea. It was Wilhelm Reich's idea in Germany in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say religion is, what did you just say?
The arch enemy of
the
sex.
The arch enemy of sex.
Yeah.
That goes hand in glove with the, so to speak, with the suppression of women, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The war against women is a war against sex. Let's not forget that what they're really after is to keep women in the home and have all the Ann Romneys with five kids.
What do you think about what she said the other day? Was that not a pisser?
It's just going to be an absolute battle, but the elephant in the bedroom is going to lose. It's a freak show.
Why has the religious right, in the form of these politicians, why at this point in our history are they, first of all, going back to the idea of birth control? Like all of a sudden, it's such a radical idea. When did birth control come out? 1962?
Well, the pill was out in the 60s.
Yeah, and birth control itself, though, goes back millennia.
Oh, way back, yeah.
Thousands of years, right?
Yes.
But why this rediscovery, Roger, that birth control bad, Planned Parenthood bad, abortion bad, a woman's private consultations with the doctor bad? It's all bad.
Well, because the Republicans want to control women, and they want to do that in part by restricting sex to procreation.
And they want to do that because?
Well, they want to do that because it's just their ideology. I mean, Alex Castellanos, the Republican consultant that's always on CNN and everything, is real upset about this because he feels being against sex is not good for the Republican Party because sex is popular. And if you look at what happened with Rush Limbaugh, he was counting on a different reaction. He didn't get it. It's mm-hmm. okay for single women to have sex and use contraception.
Oh, his comments about a woman, the woman being a slut, and so on and so forth. That really freaked me out. I mean, I've heard some pretty outrageous things on talk radio. I've said some pretty outrageous things, but that just blew my mind.
Well, it blew mine too. But we need to redefine slut. I think, you know, in my humor book, I had a different approach to that. It was a sensuous liberal urban temptress.
You better be careful of the word temptress. Roger, one of his first book was Sex from Ah to Zipper. It was supposedly a glossary of sexual terms. It was funny. And your second one was what?
The Naked Truth About Sex. That was written to teenagers.
Right. The Naked Truth About Sex for teenagers. Yeah. Did you have any trouble finding a publisher for that second one?
I did. And you know, they wouldn't keep it in print because they didn't have the money to market it. And I'm looking for a new publisher. And once I get my national show, I think it'll be easier.
You're going to wind up on the radio. Is that?
Well, I'm sure trying. Yeah. I just need some sponsors at this point.
All right. What do you do in without being specific to any of your clients? What do you do? A couple shows up and they come into you. I would imagine they'd be sort of reticent to get into the subject, but they say we're having sexual problems. What is the first thing you do?
Well, I ask them what the problem is. First of all, I already know by the time they come in my office what the problem is because I talk to them on the phone. And then I see them separately first and then together so I get a complete understanding of what I'm dealing with instead of just sugarcoating.
What's the biggest sexual problem these days, if there is such a thing?
Well, you know, what's really increasing is this whole problem of just living, failing to distinguish between pornography, like a fantasy, and reality. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of guys and more women who are just up in the clouds. They're unable to really establish a good sex life with anybody but themselves.
And how does pornography work into this?
Well, they use pornography as an adjunct to masturbation.
And it's replacing sex relations?
I'd say it's really competing, at least, yeah.
But I thought eroticism and pornography together or separately were good things.
I think they are. But some people can't distinguish, and they just get lost in that world without relating to a real person. And the Internet has, of course, ushered in this problem.
You're not recommending a sexless society, are you?
Oh, not at all. And I'm not opposed to pornography. I just think most of it's kind of uninteresting. It becomes like open heart surgery after a while, the penis and the vagina, and there's no script to make it erotic.
All right. Roger, hold on a second. I got to do some commercials. We'll come right
back. Sure.
But let's pick it up there because I've heard this before, that pornography is deadening the joie de vivre that concerns sex. I want to talk about that when we come back.
Sure.
We're talking with Dr. Roger Libby. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it is. 21 past the hour. We're talking with Dr. Roger Libby, who's joining us from Seattle. You know, I was just kidding about the hole in the sheet. Already I've gotten to like 87 emails. That's not true! I don't know. It really doesn't matter. Now, the where were we? The pornography as pornography as something that is deadening sexual excitation between real living alive men and women. Is that going on? Is that the truth?
Well, it is. It is to some extent. I mean, I'm seeing guys who are so glued to pornography, and usually they've had a very repressed background. I remember the Danes produce most of the pornography, but they don't consume it because they don't need to. They're already pretty free sexually. But in our Puritan culture, we're still not free, and so pornography is one way to fill the gap. But what happens in filling the gap is that it really fills the gap, and the guy is just, you know, it's a cop-out. He's sitting there for hours watching pornography and masturbating, and it's a lot easier than trying to satisfy his girlfriend or his wife.
You're talking about men.
Women are into it more, too. You know, we used to think that women weren't visual. I always felt that was not true, and along came the Internet, and we know that women are very visually aroused.
What do you recommend? Let's go back to this imaginary couple that comes to you. If they come in and the man is having erectile dysfunction problems, do you do you right away suggest that they go to an MD and get medication for that, or what do you suggest?
Well, I first of all, I work through a history, a sexual history, and figure out what medications he's on, whether he exercises or not, whether he drinks too much, whether he smokes. These are all contraindications to having a good erection. And I deal with his thoughts. And then I usually, if I have any question, I refer him to a specialist. I only work with specialists, medical doctors that really are specialists in this area because they know a lot more. And then I have them checked out, and, you know, I work with both the body and the mind to get at the connection between the two.
Mm-hmm. How often in that testing that you send people to get, how often does it turn out that there is some severe physical problem that is interfering?
Well, it would depend on the age. If it's an older guy, it's more likely. I mean, diabetes, of course, is a big one as people get older, and if they're overweight, especially hormone problems, low testosterone, problems with medications they're on, like a lot of the blood pressure medications work against erections, and also antidepressants, the serotonin uptake inhibitors like Zoloft, etc.
What about, you and I are almost exactly the same age, as you know.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we were on the trenches for the sexual revolution.
I was just going to ask you, what happened to the idea back in the 50s that women were just, I can remember all the talk about how difficult it was for a woman to reach orgasm during sexual intercourse or in any way, except maybe masturbation. How did that change, or was it fictitious to begin with?
Well, I mean, it's changed in the sense that there's more openness about sex, and the mind is the main sex organ. So if a woman is free in her mind, she's more likely to have an orgasm in a variety of ways. And, of course, intercourse is not the easiest way. I would say oral sex, manual stimulation, vibrators are easier. But I think a woman who gives up on having an orgasm during intercourse never will. In other words, you have to visualize something happening for it to happen.
I remember back in the 80s, Roger, I think it was in the 80s, maybe the late 70s, all the talk about something called the G-spot.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Well, it's a small area two-thirds up the anterior wall of the vagina, and it's a little smoother than the surrounding areas, and it has parasympathetic nerves that connect it to the clitoris. And so when you have, if a woman does her Kegel exercises, she brings the G-spot out so that it can be stimulated easier, and so then you have combined clitoral and G-spot stimulation, and you're more likely to have what's called a G-spot orgasm, which is an ejaculation of a clear liquid. It's not urine.
All of a sudden, I just feel a need for pretzels.
Pretzels?
Yeah, I don't know why. Those little those little curly Q pretzels, you know what I'm talking about? The ones that, I don't know, there's just something.
Do they turn you on?
Well, no, I don't know why the conversation is making me want to eat pretzels. All right, Roger, we got a break coming here. Let me put you on hold.
Now,
this is kind of a long break, so if you need to do anything, so to speak, during the break, we'll come back and chat some more, okay?
Okay.
All right, Roger. We're talking with Dr. Roger Libby, who is a sex therapist, sociologist. He has a large clientele in the Seattle area. I guess you can find him in the phone book out there, Dr. Roger Libby, L-I-B-B-Y, if you are having problems and you may want to get in touch with Dr. Libby. And I might mention to Roger that now that I mentioned this on the air, he will probably get all kinds of hysterical phone calls from right-wing freaks who couldn't find their ass with both hands, much less the other thing. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
too sexy for my love. Too sexy for my love. Love's going to leave.
Before the hour, this hour is being sponsored by Susan. In her message, happy birthday to my husband Jesse, with love from Susan. Thanks, Susan. We're talking with Dr. Roger Libby, who is in Seattle. He is a sex therapist, primarily. What, Roger, do you think, let's look at the big picture. What would it take to get people to relax a little bit more about the whole sexual thing? I listen to these Republicans, and I just think that it's some kind of a Puritan rap from, you know, from the 17th century, or maybe the 18th century. You have pointed out this extraordinary use of pornography as a substitute. What would it take to get people to just relax?
Well, I think it would help if we had sex education in the schools, where there's some accuracy as far as sex research being reported, instead of just archaic beliefs that are being foisted on them.
What about this abstinence-only idea?
Well, it's stupid. I mean, abstinence is not a reality for most people. In fact, with my book, The Naked Truth About Sex, I did a reanalysis of a national poll by Zogby, and I found that only 1% of the females and 0.5% of the males waited till they were married to have sex. Mm-hmm. So much for abstinence.
What this is kind of a question with an obvious answer, but why the reluctance to talk with high school students about sex? Now, before you answer, I can remember when I when this topic came up when I was in high school, we had a female biology teacher and we had a male physics teacher. So on the day of the sex talk, all the girls, including our biology teacher, who was female, they all had to leave the room, and our physics teacher came in. And we didn't know what the hell was going on. And he came in and he said, "Today we're going to talk about," and they actually used the word sex. And yeah. he had some charts that showed the male reproductive organs. Is that the way to say it? Male reproductive organs.
Yeah.
And we had this talk, and when it was over, or he had the talk, when it was over, I think most of us just wanted to go home and cut it off. I mean, you know, just
because he probably emphasized STDs.
No, they didn't even talk about them back there about that back then, Roger. But they did. They talked about venereal disease. That's what it was called back in the day. But the way it was presented, very mechanistically, these are blood vessels, these are this, these are that, this is your scrotum, you know, and everybody's sitting there going, oh my God!
Yeah.
And then, at the same time that was going on, in the physics teacher's classroom down the hall, our biology teacher had taken all the girls and they had the same chat, only not about male reproductive organs, obviously.
Right.
So way back then, in the late 50s, I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking, you know the area
I'm talking about.
We had sex talks back then.
Yeah, we had them, but they were useless.
Well, they may have been useless, but at least they were able to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I don't remember anyone ever talking about abstinence. Maybe they did. Maybe they did say, no, don't do this.
Well, the fear-based approach really arose about that time in high schools, in the health classes. They emphasized the dangers of STDs, and sometimes out of proportion to reality.
Where's the balance? If you say out of
control? Well, that's the problem. Unless we have comprehensive sex education that is science based instead of religiously based, we're not going to have any balance.
Do you think that the reason things got so lopsided was because of what happened with the AIDS epidemic, when all of a sudden sexual activity, whether it was homosex or heterosex, became something that could take your life?
Well, yes. I think AIDS exacerbated the risks of sex in general. And, of course, we now know that in some cases it was just way over the hill. But, yes, that was a real problem. It still is in a lot of sectors.
What do you advise your gay clients that come in, gay couples that come in who may be having the same problem as a hetero couple, I would imagine?
Yeah. Well, I see gay and lesbian couples all the time. I have a lesbian couple right now I'm seeing, and they have the same problems that you would expect in a lot of long-term relationships. They've got bored with each other, and there's not much sex, actually none going on for quite a long time. And, you know, it's called lesbian bed death, but it's the same thing happens with heterosexuals.
Bed death?
Yes.
Lesbian bed death?
Yeah.
And do you have... heterosexual bed death? I mean,
I do. I deal with it all the time. People who just get bored with each other and they've lost their zest for life and for each other and for sex.
How do you get somebody away from bed death? I never heard that. My God, what
well,
a good
you
term.
Have to re-gear the. You have to work on the. You have to work on a couple things. You got to work on the emotional attachment and affection, and not just being roommates. You've got to get them dating each other and giving each other massages and getting back into the sensual. And then the next step is to go to the sexual, and it takes a while.
If one is suffering from bed death, would it be wise to move the sexual activity to the living room?
yeah, well, that's a great idea, except you're still working with the same couple, you know?
Yeah, well, your ideas about hetero and homosex over the years that I've known you, quarter of a century, they pretty much have remained consistent, if not totally remained consistent. What, in a gentler era, you would have been called a libertine, right?
Well, I think I am still, and I think you are too.
Well,
I mean, after all, we were in the trenches, Mike, of the sexual revolution. We were definitely there, and we miss it.
We miss what? Oh, the
revolution. I think what we need is another revolution. We are the conspiracy. We have to conspire together to create the next sexual revolution.
Occupy the bedroom, kind of occupy the bedroom that moves into the bedroom. Okay.
Right.
Let me rephrase it. Why is the religious right, I'm talking about the Christian religious right, why did they present themselves, at least my understanding or my interpretation, they present themselves as being suffering from bed death?
Well, because they are. I mean, you look at most Republican marriages, there's not much going on there. I mean, there may be some hypocrisy with affairs, but in the marriage itself, it's pretty null and void.
Well, now, how do you know that? I mean,
I know that from dealing with couples from all political persuasions.
You're saying that, for example, Newt
Gingrich... I think the Republicans are more repressed, yes.
You think Newt Gingrich and Callista are not...
Oh, absolutely. I don't know what he does with Callista, but the guy is just a total hypocrite, and he's had nothing but trouble with sex his whole life. I can't imagine him with his big belly having sex anyway, can you?
Well, that's kind of beside the
it's
point.
Kind of like Rush Limbaugh. Can you imagine him having sex?
Well, no, don't. Listen, you're going to make me sick.
I call it the Rush effect. I mean, you could imagine that, you know, the guy is just... preferring to blow off his energy and frustration into the microphone instead of a vagina or another orifice.
Yeah. Well, that's you have a way with words, Roger. I swear to God, you do. But you know, Callista and Newt. I mean, Newt around Callista looks like a little puppy. Beep, beep, boop, boop, beep, beep, beep.
Well, I think she is a puppy. I can't imagine she'd be a fireball in bed. She's just all you know, the glitz of the looks.
Yeah. Okay.
She doesn't look like somebody would get into the bodily fluids and utter abandon with undulating bodies or something, you know.
Yeah. All right. Do you see other than the obvious, do you see an elemental difference between homosexual sex and heterosexual sex?
No. I think that there are lots of similarities. I mean, what is homo erectus? It's an aroused gay man, right?
Oh, boy. That took a second. Shit-a-boom. All right. You know, it almost got past me. Okay.
I know it.
So, and what is homo flaccidus? That would be... Oh, never mind.
It is?
Yeah, no, no, that's all right. Roger, don't. It's okay. Let me see, what else? Do you see the incidence of any sexually transmitted disease, whether it is the old standbys like syphilis or gonorrhea or the real killer, AIDS? Do you see, how do you see people who are sexually active responding to the reality of the possibility of
infection? There's two responses. One is one of ignorance, where it won't happen to me, and the other is one out of fear, where they're so afraid of it happening that they don't enjoy sex if they have it at all. And so neither response is really realistic. What I think you have to do is calculate your risk. Sex is always a risk. You can't have risk-free sex. There's no such thing.
What are the risks?
Of getting an STD or having a pregnancy or hurting somebody's feelings or, you know, all of those risks.
So you're talking about emotional risks, too. Physical risks.
Sure, I think they're emotional risks.
But physical risk can, and obviously pregnancy, but physical risk can be limited with a condom or some sort of birth control.
Some STDs can be protected by a condom, but not all. I mean, you know, we're dealing with, for example, herpes and HPV. Now we have a vaccine for it. It can cause genital warts. Some can be cancerous. And so the three-part vaccination is an important thing, and it's being used with young girls, but not as widely as it should be. And now it's been approved for boys, too.
All right, Roger, hold on. I got to do another break. We'll come back and chat a little bit more. This is this conversation is definitely making me want to go get some more pretzels. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It's Red Bull with the big ass bra, and like Bruce Lee, I got the clout. Yeah. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out when I walk. In the spot, yeah. This is what I see. Okay. Everybody stops and is staring at me. I got passion in my face. Would you do like you said you would? Well, it goes all night like a... I make a little run and she climbs on up. And open up a brawl and start her a little dust. Just look at her.
Sexy. You are now entering the Flying Monkey Free Zone. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it's Mike Malloy. 10 before the hour. Okay. This hour has been sponsored by Susan. And her message is happy birthday to my husband, Jesse, with love from Susan. That's pretty cool. Thanks, Susan. I appreciate your sponsorship. All right, Roger, what's the solution?
Well, I mentioned starting the next sexual revolution and developing sex education. Those are partial solutions. But I also think we have to deal with the crises today with health insurance and how anything that's dealing with sexual health is not covered, which is ridiculous. If it's a lab for hormones or if it's coming to see a sex therapist, if you code that as a sexual problem, the insurance companies won't cover it.
You're kidding.
No. They don't believe that sexual health is part of your health. And don't think for a moment they're not motivated by just sheer economics, but I think they're also motivated by the religious factor.
Well, then how to explain the exploded sales, I would assume, from the commercials of these ED tablets?
Well, they will cover sometimes a certain number of Viagra pills, for example, for men, but that's the only thing that even some of those insurance companies will cover.
Why?
I don't know. There's a bias towards men, I guess.
Bias towards... Oh, please. Yeah. Come on.
Why wouldn't they cover issues for women, then, you know?
Well, what women's issues are not covered? Sexual issues.
Well, I mean, if you look at the recent birth control fiasco, that's definitely one of them.
Well, I know, but I guess I was talking about... women's sexual health issues where it relates to seeing a therapist.
Well, if a woman comes to me and says she's never had an orgasm and I code it as orgasmia, they won't cover it. If I code it as mixed anxiety and depression, they will.
You live in
that's called the DSM code. It's what's used by insurance companies.
You have to work in a strange world, don't you?
Well, I think we all live in a strange world living in America.
Well, I know, I mean, but yeah, but you have to confront it all the time.
I do. I confront it every day. That's why it makes me so angry when I see all this negative stuff like sex addiction, for example. There's no such thing. You can't be addicted to yourself.
Yourself?
No. You can't be addicted to yourself. You can be addicted to a drug or alcohol. It's the wrong word. You might be compulsive or obsessive and out of balance, but addiction is the wrong word. It's a moralistic use.
So the term sex addiction, someone who is constantly wanting to have sex, you know, with someone else. I'm not talking about masturbation, but that person, there is no such term in your vocabulary as
there
sex
is,
addiction.
I don't think it's an accurate term. Of course, it's used everywhere. But interestingly enough, Mike, it wasn't included in the new DSM that's coming out because there was no empirical research to support the concept or of hypersexuality.
Hmm. So you would say then it's just obsessive compulsive behavior?
Yeah, and it usually when somebody's obsessive compulsive about sex, they are about other things too. Dirt, everything in its place, something.
Hmm. Well, you just gave us a revelatory thought there. There's no such thing as sex addiction. I see the term in the popular literature all the time.
Because the media created it, and a guy named Patrick Carnes.
I don't know.
Psychologist.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. That's where it all came from. They're a bunch of nutcases.
Well, that's is that in the DSM-4?
No, but look at Romney. There's another nutcase. I mean, he's saying now that he wants to do away with Planned Parenthood. He started about a month ago supporting the idea of birth control except abortion.
Right.
So he's just shifting with the winds.
The whole attack on Planned Parenthood, we all know it's political from these right-wing zealots, but is this just another manifestation of the anti-woman bias that you find with these right-wingers?
And anti-sex, both.
I keep thinking about, remember the character in 1984, Julia, who was a member of the Anti-Sex League?
Right.
And they all wore the red sash, I believe, at least the women did. I forget what the men wore, but the red sash. Do you see this country, no, impossible. You don't see this country ever coming to the point where sex would be so demonized or, nah, that couldn't happen, could it?
Well, I think if a guy like Santorum got elected, you're getting close. I've got a quote here from this is a quote from Santorum. He said, "Woodstock is the great American orgy. This is who the Democratic Party has become. They have become the party of Woodstock. They prey upon our most basic primal lust, and that's sex. And the whole abortion culture, it's not about life, it's about sexual freedom." And he says the same thing about homosexuality, et cetera, et cetera.
If he were your, now come on, just play along here for just a minute. If he were your client, mm-hmm. What would you say to Rick Santorum? Not that it matters anymore because he's dropped out, but he'll be back.
Well, what I would say to him is, why are you so obsessed with trying to repress a natural expression of human expression, which is sexuality? Why is there something? What kind of family did you come from, and what kind of beliefs were you taught, and where did this all come from? Because it's unbalanced and it's unhealthy.
And if his answer was, "I'm not against sex, I'm just against licentiousness, or I'm against people having sex outside of marriage," what if he said that?
Well, I would still say that his overreaction to try to foist his values on all people is an abomination, really. I mean, it's not healthy.
Are you, we're about out of time, Roger. Are you generally optimistic or pessimistic that the idea of sexuality is ever going to be accepted as just a natural part of human existence?
Well, I'm optimistic about it long term. If you look at Scandinavia and Holland, it's already more accepted, a lot more than this culture. But there is an inverse relationship between sex and violence. I did a cross-cultural study on this in my postdoctoral fellowship years ago, and it was published. Mm-hmm. And what we found was that in every culture, there's an inverse relationship between sex and violence. The more you try to repress sex, the more frustration, aggression, and violence you're going to get.
Interesting.
So Sweden is not as violent as we are.
Interesting. Roger, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mike. It was fun.
I hope you are successful in getting the radio gig. And I hope your client list expands exponentially from being on the program.
Well, thank you very much. I hope so, too.
Take care, Roger. Talk soon.
Thank you, too, Mike. Thanks.
Bye-bye. We'll be back after the break at the top of the hour. We will open up the lines and take your phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Randy Morrison. Thanks, Randy. No message, just a sponsorship. And thank you very much for that. Phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to check in tonight. Mark in San Francisco. Hey, Mark.
Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good. We're in for some real interesting times coming up here. What do you think?
Yeah, that's for sure.
You know, we have a march here in San Francisco on May 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it's going to be pretty big. And I guess around the country, the 99% movement's going to start up again. But boy, are we going to face a hell of a pushback from this right wing. Boy, they got millions of dollars, and it's going to be interesting to see just how desperate they get and how far they'll go to try to steal this election.
Although. I have to say that a huge chunk of the moneyed interest in this country, Mark, has no problem with the Obama presidency, and that's it. And I think you're aware of that as well as I am. Obama is a corporatist. And, you know, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent is beside the point. He has done nothing, absolutely, even the Affordable Care Act, while it does have some good aspects, it pushes 38 million people into the bosom of the insurance industry. So, you know, what are they bitching about? As far as the banking, the predatory banking industry, Obama's Justice Department has been very careful not to come down on these bastards the way they should have been come down on, the way they should have felt the power of the federal government. The state attorneys general have been doing more of the heavy lifting against these predatory bankers. And the evidence of that is they're starting the whole system, the whole process all over again of subprime loans and all the nastiness that just about sunk the capitalist system globally, which, you know, as you and I know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea. But I don't, my feeling is that the real money, the real capitalist money, the real corporatist money is still on Obama. Why shouldn't it be? What the hell has he done? The only thing he's done is to have not been, totally Caucasian. He's only partly Caucasian. So that's got a lot of these right-wingers bowels in an uproar. But I don't think there's going to be a real serious effort to move Obama out. Mitt Romney is about as qualified to be president of the United States as a teenager. No offense to teenagers. Romney is not presidential material. Obama is doing everything, I think, that the corporations want him to do. So why would they try to move him out?
You know, I'm not an Obama apologist by any means. I'm upset at him for no accountability with Wall Street or bringing it, not convicting anybody of the crimes that were committed against the American people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll be the first to jump on that bandwagon. I do think, though, that corporate America would like Romney because he would represent exactly what they want, a guy that will cut the throats of Americans and just make more profit than they're making now. I mean, if you look at the Ryan plan, Romney would definitely push that forward as fast as he could. And that'll just, I mean, we'll be finished then. That's my concern.
Well, I wonder about Romney. Romney has flip-flopped more than you know, a dying fish. And I don't have any hesitation in thinking that if Romney really starts to see, and he doesn't see it now because it's not going to happen, but if he really started to see that he was going to be president of the United States, I think all of a sudden he would totally modify his position politically. And I think if he were ever elected, I think he would tell the right wing to kiss off. You know, whatever Romney is, he is. But I don't think he is what he's presented himself to be in order to get this nomination from these crazy bastards that represent the Republican Party base. Now, I'm not saying, you know, you said you're not a Obama apologist. I'm certainly not a Romney apologist. You know, again, I just think he's totally unqualified to be president. But I don't think that he would be, were he to be elected, I don't think he would be what he's presented himself this go around. He does understand global climate change. He does understand the necessity of a mandate if you're not going to go all the way and have single payer health insurance, which is the only sane way to go. He understands all this. He's not a gun nut. You know, back in 98, he said that he just doesn't align with the NRA, and he doesn't. He's not against Planned Parenthood. He's, you know, all these things. So, you know, frankly, I think if he does turn out to be the nominee, he's going to have his ass handed to him in an Obama landslide. But
it's not only him, Mike. I mean, it's that Republican Party, put him aside, but if you look at the Republican Party, it's basically bought and paid for, you know, by the 1%. We have no representation from that party. I'm not saying the Democrats are good. They're too weak. But, you know, this Republican Party needs to be eliminated from our government and this country.
Totally.
Because it basically has an Iran ideology that's just horrible. And it needs to be eliminated.
Well, I use the word fascist a lot, and I don't use it gratuitously. I really see these people as fascists. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying. All right, Mark, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Okay, keep us posted on whatever you hear about the May Day demonstration. You know, let me know. And also, that was one hell of a light show you people apparently had in San Francisco. Was it last night with the lightning storms? I saw it on television tonight. Dear God.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything like that in years.
That's what I've heard. It must have been something. All right, Mark.
It was amazing. I have a view of the ocean, and it was unbelievable, Mike.
That's what I've heard.
Well, hopefully we'll see you out here sometime.
I hope so. Take care, Mark.
Yourself. Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I don't know how many people saw that, but there was some pyrotechnics in the sky over San Francisco last night that apparently were just astonishing. Challenge?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing?
I'm all right. That's your name?
Yeah, and I appreciate you accepting my call.
Sure. What's up?
Well, not a whole lot. I just turned the radio on a little while ago, and I heard a few things you said. And I just want to speak generally about Barack Obama.
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead.
You know, he's the first black president that we're recognizing. I'm getting all types of feedback, so it's sounding really crazy.
Yeah, I think it's on your phone. I'm hearing a lot of static, Challenge.
You think it's my phone?
Yes, sir.
Okay. But what I wanted to say basically is that this country is still saturated with a lot of racist tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of racist people that refuse to accept that a black man has the ability to run this country, even though we built it.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me interrupt just a second, Challenge, because I'll take a break. I'm going to put you on hold and come back and let you talk some more. If you're new to this program, we're way ahead of you on that. I mean, we talk about that almost every night. Well, not every night, but the whole idea that this is a racist society, of course it is. The whole idea that so many Caucasians' fortunes were built on the backs of African slaves, and the land that the Africans were forced to work for the Europeans was stolen from the Native Americans. So, yeah, we're way, way, way into that. And I think the audience that listens to this program is with you or way ahead of what you're saying. You know, you'll get there if you keep talking about it, but we're already there. So what I want you to do, if you would, Challenge, during the break here, think of what you really want to say, and we'll chat when we come back. All right? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm aggravate dead, and it's amateur day on the old super slab.
Screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Back to challenge in Oak Park, Illinois. Oak Park, Illinois?
Illinois.
Okay, all right, challenge, go ahead.
Well, I didn't really want to say a whole lot, but I appreciate you allowing me to stay online to make my comments.
Sure.
I just think Barack Obama recognizes that there's only so much he can do without causing major disruption or slaughter of black people, because there's still a lot of people out here that have some serious issues with racism. You got white folks out here that's willing to have sex and have children with black people, but they still don't respect their humanity. And until this country comes to an understanding that a human being is a human being, and you should not look at this person as something less or more than you, because this white supremacy thing affects black people in a very negative way too, that make some of them think that they're less than white people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As much as it makes white people think that they're more than black people, until this country comes to realization that a human being is a human being, irregardless of the pigment of their skin, there will always be situations like what's the kid's name?
Trayvon.
Trayvon. Yeah, I mean, the way they handled that case is outrageous. They obviously didn't even respect his humanity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and until we can have, and there are some people in this country like that, that realize that a life is a life, regardless of its ethnicity and its culture, a life, but we don't have enough people like that. And I think Obama recognizes that. I think, most of the people, most of the intellectuals that's running this country recognize that. And so that's the reason why you got people like, what's his name, Romney?
Mm-hmm.
He said he's really kind of like in the middle, but he plays to the right because
right.
He's trying to get in office. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we still have people that don't recognize that every life is important, Barack Obama, you know, his presidency is going to be difficult. I hope he make it the second time, to be honest. I don't know if he will or not,
mm-hmm.
You know, because there's so many hateful people out there. But you know, as long as we got people that don't recognize that every life is important, regardless of their ethnicity or the pigment in their skin,
mm-hmm.
There's always going to be problems in this country. You just can't get around. So I think he making his decisions so that he can try to keep the country together and try to keep people from getting killed. Well, let's face it, you got a lot of black people that don't believe in guns, don't have guns, and you got a lot of white folks that believe in guns and will shoot a black person for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the scary part of it. I think he recognizes that, and I think he's intelligent for making decisions with that in the back of his mind. And, you know, maybe I should have wrote some stuff down, but I turned my radio on, and I heard you talking for, like, maybe 3 seconds, and I decided to call in just based on a few words that I heard you say. I appreciate you carrying me over through your break, and that's all I got to say. I hope I made sense.
You did. No, you did, Challenge. I hear what you're saying loud and clear. I don't disagree with anything that you said at all. I'm glad you called. I hope you will call again. And I hope you take care. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Randy Morrison. Thank you, Randy. Back to the phone calls. Stevens in Burbank. Hello, Steven.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I heard the interview with Dr. Libby.
Yeah.
And what wasn't mentioned was the innate desire for possession, you know, like when Bush said this is an ownership society.
Right.
And what you can objectify and what you can claim possession of, what you can own, is what you can control. And that's what the right wing is all about. They're about control. There's a place I deliver to, and one of these guys is a total rabid zombie, and I pulled in once, and he's giving his fellow workers, like, a lecture about God, how God is good and God is great.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's talking to me about how he doesn't get enough money, you know. He wishes he could get enough money, he could make enough money at his job to have a girlfriend on the side. And so I see this in reality. And I look at, like, the alpha dog mentality, and we try to get ourselves going on this, well, let's be a lone wolf, or let's go with the trend, or let's go with trying to articulate what the reality is.
Mm-hmm.
I made mention about Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale.
Right.
And that is the direct, that is the direct connection to what reality is, if guys try to understand what it is about girls.
Mm. Well, you know, I am so anti-religion, any religion, because it has been nothing but a massive failure. I don't think there's any aspect of, and I think the guy you're telling me about points that out. I don't think there's any aspect of religion. It doesn't teach you morality. It doesn't teach you ethical behavior. In some of the religious texts that were laid out by you know, avatars of these various religions, whether they were Jesus or Muhammad or whomever, there are directions on how to live a life that is not so corrupted. But, you know, when I look around, at especially the fundamental aspects, the fundamentalist aspects of these religions, especially the religions of the book, the people of the book, all I see is hypocrisy. I see deceit. You know, the same people who tell you not to get abortions are the very same people that say, let's go invade Iraq and kill a million people. I mean, it's goddamn insanity. It's just total insanity. So I don't see, and anyone who wants to say to me, well, but there are Christian leaders who aren't that way. Yeah, well, okay, but they don't have the following or the platform or the authority. And it gets back right back to what you said. It's a society that is built on possession. If I can possess command and control, no matter what I'm doing, if I'm on Wall Street, if I'm in the in a church, in a synagogue, a mosque, if I can order people to hate and kill, if I can order settlers to steal other people's land, if I can order my followers to strap on a bomb belt and go blow themselves up, if I can order my followers to demonize women, you know, this is the reason to me, Stephen, without getting, I didn't want to get this far into it, but this is a reason to me. I mean, the whole religious con is just that. It's just filth. I have raised two children without any religious garbage pumped into their head. One is 33 and the other one is 7. And I will tell you this, that these two and my two other two grown daughters did not get any religious training whatsoever. And they weren't forced to go to a church, a mosque, a synagogue, or any kind of institution that's going to corrupt their minds. And I don't see anything wrong with them. To the contrary, I see that they have more control over their lives, more understanding of the nature of life rather than, as the religions teach you, the nature of death. And I don't know, Stephen, I don't see anything about religion that has any positive aspect at all, the way they're practiced. Anyone who wants to live an ethical life, or and I say ethical, morality varies, but if you want to live an ethical life, and to me that means a life in balance, you don't need religion. As a matter of fact, religion will corrupt that very idea. I don't give a damn what the religion is. It'll corrupt that. It'll teach you hatred. It'll teach you suspicion. It'll teach you fear. It'll teach you contempt, disgust, and outrage. And it makes me outrageous. So anyway, enough of the sermon. I'm sorry. I just got off on that. You know, just
A neat way to counter that is to just admit to ourselves that there's no way that we can just broad brush humanity. Our personalities are different. And, you know, I keep fidelity, and I'm not going to ask my congressman to make a law against other people having orgies. It's not my problem, you know. Certain types of people group with certain kinds of people. You know, it's like bird species, you know. Pigeons made for life, and then there's other species of birds. It's not my problem. I know who I am, and I know that you are who you are, and I know that other people are who they are, and it's like Thomas Jefferson said, you know, hey, they aren't causing me any problems, then it ain't my problem.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I finished that essay that you wanted me to write. It takes 15 minutes to read.
Well, email it to me or mail it to me or something.
Well, I wish I could, but this weekend I'm going to have to go to church on Sunday.
You are? Well, a funeral?
3300 Wilshire, Dr. Cornell West and Tavis Smiley.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
I'm going to make their lives miserable.
Yes, you are. I'll bet you are.
Okay.
I'll bet you are. All right, Stephen, thanks. Stay in touch. Send it to me when you can.
Okay, boss.
All right. Appreciate you checking in. Take care, Stephen. Take care. You know, to me, the real religious fanatics, the Christians and the Muslims, I mean, the really out there, which is, to my way of thinking, is most of them. I'm sorry if that's a totally irresponsible statement. Okay, I'll accept it as totally irresponsible. But I'll make it anyway. But these people are all about their afterlives, these fantastical structures that they put together of how great it's going to be after they do their damage on this planet and you know, try to tell themselves, and they do it, obviously, very successfully. Well, it's okay. I can blow people up, or I can treat people like dirt. I can be a real creep head. I can be a suicide bomber. I can be, I can lead an invasion. I can get involved in an invasion of other people's countries because God told me to. I mean, this madness at some point has got to stop. I'm reminded again of what Denis Diderot said, that man will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. And that is so correct. It is so absolutely correct. That, you know, this combination, and it's becoming more and more apparent that fascism and religion have decided to just not just get in bed together, but to have this wild orgy of satanic intercourse in order to absolutely destroy the planet, everybody on it, any idea of art or poetry or right thinking. I don't know. I get pretty weird about this, if you understand what I'm saying. I'm sure you do. Every time I hear somebody in a command and control position in the U.S. military who talks about God's orders or you know, God go with us into battle, I can't help but think about Mark Twain's, the war prayer. But I see these people. And I see them mix murder, death, destruction, conquest with this horror that is their God. And I don't know. You know, if you believe that insanity, you can justify anything. You can justify the murder of your own children. You can damn sure justify the murder of somebody else's children. All right, I don't know, that just blows my mind. You want to live an ethical life? Live an ethical life. You don't need this claptrap, this ridiculous nonsense that has as its core your absolute terror of your own death. We'll be right back. Throw a drowning man alive, peace on earth. To tell the ones who hear no sound, whose sons are living in the ground, peace on earth. Jesus, in the song you wrote, the words are sticking in my throat, peace on earth. Hear it every Christmas time, with hope and history won't rhyme, so what's it worth? This peace on earth. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Randy Morrison. Thanks, Randy. Thank you very much. Back to your calls. Alvin is in Montgomery, Alabama. Hello, Alvin.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Just great. The Hillary Rosen issue?
Uh-huh.
Oh, by the way, I agree with everything you were saying about religion a second ago. But have you thought about this? Without people having that hope, reason why it works, you get people to suffer peacefully and not demand better care, because religion stresses that you don't get yours now, you'll get yours in the hereafter. So you're willing to forego, you know what I'm saying? You'll wait peacefully and forego having adequate health care. Because in the hereafter, you're going to get everything.
Well, it's what Karl Marx said, you know, 100 years ago, and I'm misquoting him, but this idea that religion is the opiate of the masses, and is absolutely correct. When you look at countries where the indigenous people, and they're usually not Caucasian, and all of a sudden they're invaded by a combination of an army and the Roman Catholic Church, what are they told? They're told, don't practice birth control, continue to live in poverty, give us 10% of whatever it is you can scrape together, because as just like you said, Alvin, because eventually you'll get your reward in some imaginary place. So people, you know, rather than rebel against this, rather than join a revolution and say, no, you know, my consciousness, if I'm lucky, is going to be 70, 75 years. It's probably going to be less than that because I live in this godforsaken place where there's disease and there's no medical care and there's no good diet. So you're telling me to go ahead and cut the sugar cane or plant the cotton or go hunting and try to live a life that is painful and brutish and short, and to keep my mouth shut because you're telling me there's some hereafter. I mean, that's crazy, Alvin. It's crazy. And you're right. It keeps people down. It just keeps them down.
You're right. I don't know why they don't see the hypocrisy in the people that they're following. They continue to follow those people, yet they believe in that book. But they really believe in that book.
Yeah.
Can I go to the Rosen issue real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The Hillary Rosen issue says everything that you need to know about Barack Obama. Now, I think, here's why I think he should have said. Mitt Romney, Ann Romney is exactly right. Raising a family is very difficult work. And I applaud her for the effort she provides her family, as I applaud my wife. But my wife, just like Ms. Romney, they're very fortunate. They have an option of staying home and not working outside the home at all.
Right.
But there are millions of women in America who have to balance raising families between careers. But that's not what he did. He decided to throw Ann Rosen under the bus. And that's what he always does.
Well,
right,
but doesn't any president? We've had 43 white presidents, and one black president, and so I can't say, well, hasn't every president, black, white, brown, whatever, said the same thing? But once you get to that level, you know, you're not going to say, I don't know that Obama didn't really feel that. You're right. He had a moment there. He had a teaching moment. But look what happened a couple of weeks ago when he said that Trayvon Martin, if he had a son, it would look like Trayvon Martin. How these cheap sons of bitches around the United States jumped him like they were trying to mug him. They jumped on him like they were going to drag him back in an alley and steal his wallet just because he said that. So now, Hillary Rosen makes a statement that Ann Romney never worked a day in her life, most people of average intelligence knew what she was saying. She never worked for wages. She never had to leave her kids. She never had to find daycare. She never had to find a babysitter. She never had to turn her back on her own children so she could go take care of somebody else's. We all knew what she was saying, but Obama couldn't, and Obama knew it too. He knew it. But he just couldn't. He couldn't come out and say it because he's in it.
He won't fight.
And in a sense, you know, I'm hard on Obama, but in a sense, I almost don't blame him. I mean, what the hell is he supposed to do? Is he supposed to tell the truth about this society? Is he supposed to tell the truth? He can't. So, you know, where does that leave him? He's made history. After 350 years, there's a black man, more or less, who's pregnant. Who's president. Now, when I say more or less, it's not up to me to identify Obama as to, you know, where he falls on the racial spectrum. It's up to him to identify himself. But I'm not a fool. I know his mother was white. I know his father was black. So to me, if society says he's a black man, okay. If he says he's a black man, okay. So he's made his history. He's made history. Now why doesn't he just kick ass and take names? And the answer to that is because he can't. And I know he can't. Because he wants...
You had a white president that gave up, voted vote. That white president catch hell too. When Jimmy Carter was elected, they
sure.
got on a TV show called Carter Country.
Sure.
And they talked about that man like a dog.
Sure.
That goes with the term. If you're a Democrat, you know this. If you're a Democrat, you get your ass kicked. Every president, whether black or white, we don't have one black. But all those white presidents, they call hell.
I know.
Alvin,
listen, I'd like to sit here and talk all night. I wish we could sit around and drink some beers and talk all night. But I'll tell you what, pal, I got to go. We are flat out of time. I'm glad you called in. Take care. You have a good weekend, all right? Take care, Alvin. You have a good weekend, too. I'll see you Monday. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, yeah, keep it lit. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Goodnight, Kathy.
Hey, True Seekers, Mike.